Stay tuned for your 3CR podcast, featuring interviews from Bundles Fire Radio Show. 3CR is an independent community radio station in Fitzroy, Victoria, on the unceded lands of the Kulin Nation. For more information, go to www.3cr.org.au. Yeah, good morning again, everyone. It's 13 minutes past 11. I'm here in the studio with some very special guests, Chief Melmox.
Yes.
And Jess.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
All the way from what they call British Columbia. What's the tribal name for there? What's your mob's name?
For myself, I'm Hereditary Chief Namox of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. We have 22,000 square kilometers of unceded, non-treaty, undefeated lands. We are the authority. We did a court case that ended December 11th, 1997, where we took on British Columbia, the province, and then Canada itself to prove that we exist. We had to prove to them that we exist. And in 1997, they said, hey, you do. And guess what? We are the authority. So the province of British Columbia and Canada, the federal government, only have assumed and presumed authority because we've never signed a CD or a treaty. We've never, ever given them any authority at all. And when we get into conflict of them wanting to destroy our territory, that is our duty to make sure that it is protected. And they do everything in their power, including violence, to try to get the project through. But we're very strong and very good at what we do.
I assume that's pretty resource rich, you know, like the way they see the environment and the land and... Yeah, so it's up against it, I suppose. You got rare earth minerals there and things like that?
We got gold, copper, silver, molybdenum. We have the largest sawmill in the world is on our territory. And, yeah, they're willing to bulldoze it through. And you have to realize, with our territories, the Gitxsan as well, you could drink out of every creek, river, and lake. And we are part of the two largest salmon-producing rivers in Canada, and they want to destroy that as well.
Yeah, it sounds very familiar. You know, like, wasn't that long ago where we could actually drink out of the rivers and creeks here, you know, and we looked after our land. And, you know, what's happened in the last 200 years, not many people realise the gravity of the crime that's gone down here in what they call, I call it Australia. It's, you know, basically destroyed the place in a really short space of time. You know. I feel that. I got a saying that there's a parallel between genocide and ecocide. If you kill off the customary law people, the caretakers, the custodians, and the guardians of the land, that's what's going to happen.
So, well, that's what they call progress in their world.
That's what they call progress.
Yeah, they call it progress, where they could absolutely destroy everything. And it always bothers me. They come in, they can destroy and take whatever they want. They get to go home, and yet we are home. That is our home, that is our land, and that is our future for our children. And if we even did a fraction of what they do to us, we go to jail. They get rewarded. Like, they come in, I want to use the example of some of the raids, because they have militarized police forces come in, and then they have, you know, people from all over the world with the guns, the dogs, and helicopters, they attack us, and they get rewarded. Like, the attorney general who signed the attack orders on us is now our premier. And you think about one of the Gold Star commanders of the, they call it CURG at the time, Community Industry Response Group. He is now the head of the police in the largest city in Canada. And that's his reward. Meanwhile, our homes are burnt down. Our people are arrested. 40-degree weather, below weather. They get arrested and put into dog kennels to be brought into town, to be put in jail naked, and then put in front of a judge with shackles and handcuffs in their underwear, and that's our reward.
Yeah. It seems like there's a lot of similarities. I always thought that, you know, the Americas and Australia here, and Canada being a Commonwealth country too, like, we have that connection. Apparently we've got the same king.
We have the common, they have the wealth.
We call it stolen wealth.
Yeah.
The stolen wealth of Australia here. Yeah. There's very similar things. They never even attempted to do treaties here. Like, this is, you know, Australia developed on the back of, you know, around about the time of the War of Independence in America, when the British were thrown out of there, and they focused on here. Then, you know, And, you know, this place is out of sight, out of mind from the rest of the world, and, you know, they got away with a lot earlier. They're still doing it. You know, the genocide continues. There's no doubt about that. You know, they're still killing us in their custody and removing our children, creating these conditions of life. It's, in fact, everything it's defined as genocide in that convention called the Convention for the Prevention and the Punishment of the Crime of Genocide, they're guilty of, and there's no doubt about it. And we're struggling to get into the court and get them to admit that that's just the case. They're preventing us from blocking us, and so we're just continuing to fight on that level. So I think there's a lot of similarities with us in this country here.
They follow patterns. They'll never change their patterns. You know, if they do it in one area, they'll do it in another. They call it a success. But I think it's the people that can make the difference for the next generations. We're very lucky. Like, for the Wet'suwet'en, I can only speak in our nation. We're one of the last, if not the last, in Canada to have European contact. We've had less than 150 years.
Gee.
And what they've done to us in 150 years is amazing. I'm the son of a residential school survivor. My mother went to residential school, and that school didn't shut down until I had graduated public school, grade 12. And the very fact that my dad was taken away at 3 years old and moved to the other end of the country, basically used as child labor, and the only way he got out of that is he got the people to sign him up for the Second World War. And then he goes and fights for our country, does it for 7 years, comes back, and he's not allowed on his own land because we were wards of the Queen. So he had to serve another year in the British Navy to be able to step on his own land and come home, where he finally got to meet his siblings.
Yeah, some similarities there. Like my great-grandfather's buried over there in France on the Western Front there. And, you know, it's probably a better option than me living in a concentration camp here, to go and have a bit of an adventure around the world. And they were seen as equals in the trenches, but when we got home, they were treated, you know, the same thing. We got treated pretty badly. There was no soldier settlement for Aboriginal people.
Yeah, exactly. He never even got to vote. I remember when Dad voted, he made sure that we walked to the little community fire hall where he voted and watch him walk up the stairs to vote for the very first time defending this country.
What year was that?
That would be in the 60s.
Yeah.
I was a little child, and I do remember him walking up those stairs.
Yeah, we got the right to vote in 1967, I think. And I've never voted myself, personally. I'm not encouraging them. And so I suppose if you're in a position where you've got the numbers, it might mean something. But, you know, it doesn't make any difference, the numbers of our people voting, you know. And, you know, we say that our law is it's unchangeable, come from the beginning. We don't need to talk about democracy and stuff like that. It's established law, and so it worries me that, you know, voting, we get caught up in their system. We're actually not in the federal constitution, actually. It was just recently they tried to get us in there, and we said no. And now some focus on treaty business. This is what's going on in Victoria at the moment, which is not a real treaty. It's pretty
pathetic. We're non-treaty for the very reason that Canada itself, and I would assume the same thing here, and it's only an assumption, that they've never been honoured. It's a piece of document. They'll make all these promises, but then it'll always go in their favour. In Canada, we never signed one, because as soon as you sign it, you lose 87% of your territory. It's gone. It's theirs. Why would you do that?
That's right. It's more about legitimising them by signing a treaty. If you're not in control of the process, and we're not, they don't recognise that, you know, we've even got a law here, and it's, you know, they're working with basically their own employees, the Aboriginal bureaucrats and things like that. They're the ones that sat down and organised this agreement. There was no thought of the elders or anything like that. Who are the law holders?
Yeah, well, with ourselves, with the Delgamuukw Estate court case of 1997, Gwiluk and Gubu could speak to that. The very fact that they made us write down our history, do our maps in our language as well as theirs, And then when it went to the Supreme Court of Canada, they said, oh, well, the lower courts made a mistake. You didn't have to do 10 and 15 years of work to get this all translated, put on maps, recorded all the stories, put into English. And so they wasted time. But we're so very proud of our elders and our ancestors, most of who I passed on, to be so strong to do that and let them know we are here. And we are regarded as unique in Canada. The Gitxsan Nation and the Wet'suwet'en are the only two to ever do that. And that's why we are so strong in our culture. And we will not never give up that power, because you give up your power, you're giving up your children. They become their children with one stroke of the pen.
You got to be thinking of your children's children's children when you do business here. And also, you got to be thinking about your ancestors too. You don't want to disrespect.
You got to remember, you know, the future. The past is the future. No, if we get back to what our elders did, this world will be in a far better place than where we are right now.
Absolutely. So, what was your thoughts of coming to Australia? You wanted to have. I know that you went to Murujuga, Burrup Peninsula. Just the other day, I think. Jess, what's the reason for coming to Australia, and what's the thinking behind that? And the other thing is, where do you get resources from?
Right.
To be able to do things independently, I assume. And
Yeah, thank you. First of all, just for the proper protocol on our behalf, my name is Gwilachom Gabu. I am Gitxsan. I belong to Welpspok. When we step into these spaces, we want to acknowledge all of your male chiefs, your female chiefs, and your children of chiefs and soon-to-be leaders. We each have our own protocol. For the Gitxsan, we say Sim Gaget, Sigram Hanach, Kansk Obu Wilson. Dinize, Tsakose, Skaize. That is, the latter part was the Wet'suwet'en that I use to address Dinize the Mox, who's sitting right beside me. We're a culture that's based on respect, just like any other indigenous culture that I've ever experienced. True human values. There's no closed door meetings. We do our business face to face. And it's a real honor to be here and to have these conversations with other brothers and sisters that are very like-minded in their governance. So, you know, to answer your question, we had a really, really great time, and it felt absolutely special to be invited to the Mura to have a meal with Ray and her family and many other people, to really set foot on their land, to drink the water, and breathe the air, and in our books that is something that you will never forget, and that changes our DNA every time we get to be on other people's territories, and being up in Western Australia. It felt so surreal. It felt all so familiar to us to have the stark contrast of industrial, large-scale invasions, destruction of ancient traditional territories, all in the name of the mighty dollar, in most cases for corporate entities under foreign ownership to line the pockets of billionaires. And as Indigenous people, we're being told that this is being done in the name of national interest. And nobody ever cares about our nations. We are nations. We are countries. We're sovereign. We've stewarded these lands since time immemorial. And it's only been a blink of an eye of the Western society encroaching on that and fastly killing our people.
Yeah, and the environment.
Jason. Absolutely.
And I think it's Woodside, one of the big operators up there.
It is Woodside.
Woodside, and you know they're connected to. They're connected to your country too, Woodside, and.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they're multinational companies, and like taken all the wealth out of the country. Nothing comes back here. They're taking all this gas and issues with people's energy here, you know, like, and they're selling it all around the world. And, you know, these multinational companies, they don't pay tax and things like that. They influence the governments and control the governments, basically. So I'm pretty sure there'd be the same companies, too, over there, and ripping our country to pieces and, you know, and just they just wear our people down, you know, like, this won't go away until they get...
It's a meat grinder.
It's a meat grinder.
Yeah, it's the same companies, it's the same money, and it's always the same playbook around the world. Much like colonization, as we know it and as we've experienced it ourselves, and you have, and many other indigenous people, far too many. It still exists because it works so well for the Western world.
Yeah.
And in the case of Woodside has an involvement in a project that has not seen final investment decision, that is planning on going through Gitxsan territories at home, and we take that very serious. Of course, when someone comes around and wants to sell you something or justify their actions, they'll tell you anything. But I think actions speak far more than words, and so it was. It only took a minute for us to decide. Let's get on the plane. We want to see what Woodside is all about, and how they treated people here. And it's absolutely not shocking to see that this playbook remains the same, and we've taken their very clear stance. We've addressed Woodside, we've addressed like other financiers of these projects, that were in total opposition. It's a hard no, and as far as I'm concerned, they shouldn't just fuck off, they should fuck all the way off.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are some of the things that are working for you, and how do you defend yourself, and do you have any support from the wider community around you as well, you know, like? How do you fight back? Let us know.
Yeah, I mean,
what's working for you?
We're not holding a recipe, and we would never show up in places and tell people how to do this job. We can only speak from experience and what we've encountered. It's pretty clear that we will not have more money, and we will not have more comms, and we will not have more lawyers than corporate business and elected governments around the world. But we do have relationship, we do have connection, human to human and human to environment, and that is far stronger than any of it. So it's super important to follow the money and to educate Western world decision makers when it comes to financing these mega projects. After all, I would say in 10 out of 10 cases, the information that is being that trickles down to financiers comes from project's proponents, and it's not worth the paper it's printed on.
Yeah.
And a huge one for us is relationship building.
Yeah.
Like, people don't realize how many people have the same mind process. You love a place, you love a human, you love your child. That doesn't have a color. That love can be shared. I think the outreach that we do and the communications that we have with people is to introduce these people to each other, because you're just working from an assumption that a color of your skin will make another person of an opposite color not along with you, when in fact humans that truly have a heart will work together for this. Each year we do a gathering, it's called Peace and Unity. That is not about racism or anything. That is simply about the environment. Like, we do a lot of work. We do a lot of studies. We have the reports. Make sure we know and compare damages throughout the world and collectively how it affects the planet. And then work from your heart, because that is what drives you. It's not a monetary value for us. We're talking about the future here. We're talking about our children and grandchildren. And so are our allies, whether it be indigenous or non-indigenous.
Absolutely.
Because the corporations don't have a heart and a soul. I've never seen a dollar bill yet have a heart or a soul. And I don't know how to cook it. I guess crooks know how to cook money. I know how to cook fish. I know how to cook moose meat. I know how to cook bear meat. That is what I know how to cook. I don't know how to cook somebody's mind to get them so brainwashed that they'll drink the Kool-Aid like the politicians do, enter their parliament, and all of a sudden they're on industry side when they actually have children they should be looking after for the future. Because you got to realize, my personal opinion, and this is only my personal opinion, politicians are like dirty diapers. They should be changed quite regularly, and basically for the same reason, because they're full of shit.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel there's a change happening amongst the wider community. You know, I mean, look, because what's affecting them, and they mightn't care about the genocide of our people, but ecocide affects them. And that's what I assume that program, that peace and unity gathering, is, you know, gathering momentum and growing strong. That's what I assume, because that's what's sort of happening here. You know, they're seeing their own mortality here, and so things are going to change. I always thought that, you know, they mightn't care about our rights, but when it starts to affect them, they're going to start thinking about, you know, their survival as well.
Well, that goes under the NIMBY effect, doesn't it? Not in my backyard until it's in yeah. your backyard, and then everybody cares.
That's right.
But you're right with the ecocide. If they remove your food, your sustenance, you become reliant on them. I have an issue with being dependent on somebody. I love being independent. The Wet'suwet'en and the Gitxsan, we can get our own food. We can access it.
Yeah.
And if they take it away from you, then you have to depend on them. And that's what they've done since contact in our territory. They came for the fur, then they came for the timber, and then they came for the rocks, which is the gold, silver, copper, and molybdenum. And now they're trenching through to poison the very water that we have and call that progress when everything is removed and nothing is left.
Sorry.
Like, I don't know how I could ever face children or grandchildren when they ask me, what did you do when this happened? Oh, I just sat back and took it. That's not the way the human's supposed to be. The human stands up for the human. You have to think beyond what a corporate person who sits in their office in a high tower thinks as they look down on the world that we're nothing, because they've done that to us. We're less than human in their eyes. And they need to be taught a lesson. And the lesson is, guess what? We need to survive. We can't depend on you, because you've proven that we can't depend on you.
Absolutely. So, like, you know, our people used to, our land was the foundation of everything. And, you know, we managed to survive for a long time, you know, in harmony with all the other tribes across this continent. And not just that, but in harmony with the land as well. And if it was up to us, we'd be going back straight back there. You know, they've got an unsustainable system here, and it's going to crash sooner or later. And it seems we're going to crash pretty hard. But, you know, we're still fighting for our rights and all that as well. So, you know, I believe our day will come. I've just got to continue to believe in that.
I couldn't agree more. And I thought that change you're referring to is where I'm seeing our youth. There's a really strong movement of young leaders that, thankfully, to the hard work of our ancestors, grew up in a system that allows bit by bit for these spaces to evolve organically, where young people have to maybe face less violence physically. Legislative poverty and racism is still around, and it's actually, in my opinion, probably currently going through a bit of a resurgence and coming back quicker than ever. But these young people have grown up into becoming absolutely fierce and strong leaders that had an opportunity to gain safe exposure to this this world that's a little bit fucked, and they're making great decisions, and that gives me lots of hope, and that's really, I think, Renamox and myself and many others. That's where we put all of our eggs in one basket, in supporting these environments that create more smart people.
Yeah, I agree, and I feel it. I see a lot of amongst the non-Aboriginal people, young people. They're my greatest supporters, that's really growing really strong at, right at this time, right now. I can sort of smell a revolution in the air because of it. And I've got a little saying, Australia's never really had a revolution, but it's always been revolting. We're not going to give up our land, and ever. And we got unceded sovereignty here. I don't know if you're looking at the... they made an apology to Aboriginal people yesterday, after 250 years. Anyway, they mentioned that we had never ceded our sovereignty. I'm going to take that on full on. And
I often wonder when, because we received a number of apologies from our Canadian government, and I often wonder, are they apologizing for what they did, or are they apologizing that they got caught?
Yeah, well, we feel like that we've checkmated them in terms of all those things, and they've had to say something, but they were never going to do that without being pushed into it. They apologised for the forced removal of Aboriginal children, which was a horrendous form of genocide that goes on, the way they destroy our young people, you know. And so, you know, and then this apology yesterday was about all the other crimes they committed on us, but it's got to be more than just a hollow, insincere apology. That's what I see them as. In this so-called treaty they're talking about in Victoria, this is the first one, actually, first one across this whole continent. There's no land to come back. There's no rights recognised. It's just really, it's really shameful. And,
there are some very clear warning signals coming in that statement that you just made to us, because we've experienced it. If you think apologies, is that what they're going to do next after they not honor a treaty which would respect you and give you, actually acknowledge your sovereignty, because you've never given up anything? You know, I'm the son of a residential school survivor. My mother went to residential school. That residential school never shut down until I graduated grade 12. And if you actually think about the apology they gave there, it really didn't mean anything. And if you think about the way that, I'm going to use UNDRIP, United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. I was there when it was implemented. British Columbia, the province, British Columbia was the first one to implement in Canada, and they call it DRIPA, Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People.
Yeah.
Well, it meant nothing because they raided us. They come at us with armed police forces, mercenaries, burn down our homes. You got to watch our documentary. It's called Yinta, Yintah. And on there, you can see where we followed 10 years of our filming. We had 1,200 hours of filming, brought it down to around 2 hours. But it shows our perspective, because we don't have to allow them to take the narrative. I would expect them sometime in the future come and apologize for that. But is it going to replace the damage that is done? You know, they always talk about trauma. We are very strong people. All Indigenous people are. What they would refer to as trauma. You know what? We rely on our history. Okay, what did our grandparents say? How did they survive? They always want a better life for us. And that's all we're trying to do for this next generation. And as Gwilakum Gubu said, I have so much faith in the youth right now of all races. They are so knowledgeable, so strong. They are the bright candle that I am looking and walking towards. But the very fact that if we allow countries to do treaties and then say, I'm sorry, turn the page and then do it again, because it is repetitive, where are we truly going to be? Where's the humanity in that? I've always thought that and hoped, because of being the son of a Second World War veteran, that we would get a better world, because we stood up for freedom. And right now our country is moving more to a petrol state and a police state, because we are the template. We are the first to go through what we've done for this amount of time, and yet it's normal. The police officers that abuse us, kill us, our men get beat to death, they get suspended with pay. You know what that is, right? That's a holiday, and they could take a second job.
Well, you're telling our story here, right here. Exactly the same thing happens to our people here as well, you know. I mean, despite all the deaths in custody, they had a royal commission into that. And then since that royal commission, there's been about 1,000 Aboriginal people die in the custody. So, and no one's ever been charged. No, not one policeman's ever been charged with a death of our people, you know.
We have a highway going through our territories. It's called the Highway of Tears for all the murdered and missing women.
It's
nothing to them. We're only a statistic. And yet if it happens to one of their children or their wives or their sisters, it's a major event.
Yeah, absolutely.
We say that to the politicians as well as the police, and you know what? They take it as a threat. Are you threatening me and my children and my wife? No, we're giving you a fact, is that this is what has happened. Oh, well, now they changed law. We can't even mention it to them because then they take it as a threat. Do you know what they did with us? For our songs, we have drums, we have sing. We can't even be within 10 meters of a police officer to sing our songs because we are assaulting their ears. They are allowed to move towards us. We have to stay 10 meters back.
Jesus. Unbelievable, isn't it?
Well, that's what everybody thinks Canada is, this great country of freedom. We don't
know. It's a beautiful country.
It is. It's absolutely, because we work hard to keep it beautiful. But the very fact that they can change these laws, again, to give them the upper hand and make you less than human, lose your culture, they'll never win. I know I'm Wet'suwet'en. I was born Wet'suwet'en. I'll die Wet'suwet'en. There's already another Chief Namox ready to take my place, and he was trained the same way.
Yeah, I agree. No, it might be kill us physically, they'll never kill our spirit. Mm-hmm.
I don't have to hate people. I don't have energy for that. I don't have to hate the player, but I can sure hate the game.
In this country, we had a thing called the Mounted Native Police Force. Very brutal squad, death squad, basically. Done a lot of killing. They were the very first people to ever be employed by the state. And the damage that they'd done to our people, it's sort of morphed into the black bureaucrats that sit in there and work with the state. Do you have those sorts of problems? Do you have, what's the unity like amongst yourselves there?
As you were speaking about our own people becoming, say, whether police officer or not, I'm going to use ANABIP, which is our child wellness system. They say welfare, we say wellness. So we took that over. Nothing happens to our children without the chiefs. Nobody gets apprehended unless we're contacted first. We're the first ones in Canada to have it. But then they wanted us to become a delegated agency. Well, that was just brown skin doing the work of the federal government. So we're non-delegated. It is us. And of course, they're going to cut the funding and they're going to say, oh, if you don't do with it, we're going to take, and they keep chopping it back, go ahead. But they'll never own our children. That's only money. They were born to be our children. They're born to be our leaders. We're not going to say, guess what? Give us the paper. We'll sign it. We'll follow your rules. We'll do exactly what you did. But we'll just do it with a brown face. That'll never happen.
You know that when you attack another people, what you do is attack their children, and it's long term. That's an act of genocide. Actually,
we want our children to be free to think freely, to love freely, to make sure that what they do, there's no pressure. If you look at a child, watch children of all color playing together. They will play freely. They'll laugh. They'll have joy until a certain age, and then they're taught to dislike this, this, or this. And then they become categorized, and it's normal for them. To us, when you're a child, you're simply open to learning and love.
Absolutely.
Everybody has a parent. Everybody has a grandparent. Aunts, uncles, cousins, siblings, whatever relative there is. That is a law that we follow. But we are strict about, you will not be violent. You will not. There are problems. There are social issues in every race on the planet. But that doesn't mean that we should become so normalized to them looking down at us and categorizing us as something. We, in the short period of time that we've had European contact, we've got doctors, lawyers, we've got it all.
Yeah.
Because our elders said, you know what? Bring in the best of the best, to learn from the best of the best, to be the best for the best. Then turn that around because it's time for them to learn from us.
Just on kids, and the education system over there, how does the curriculum look?
It's changed a lot in this last decade. Like every school, we have 22,000 square kilometers, and again, as the kids and I have 30,000. But our history books are in every classroom, and it is mandated that they cannot graduate grade 12 until they study the effects of residential school.
Oh, right.
And they did that voluntarily. We did not have to drag them along. They said, can we do this? We said, absolutely, we've been asking you to do it. But we're never going to make progress if we keep on butting heads. But when they approached us, and finally, and it took a long time to get to that point, but drumming and singing in every school, I'm going to say the majority of the drumming and singing groups that are in the school are non-Indigenous because they love it. because it gets attached to stories. It gets attached to humanity. And if you think about our drums, it's your heartbeat. And everybody has the same heartbeat.
So that surely have a change. You know, I believe, you know, like, it only takes a couple of generations in the education system to change, fundamentally change the racism and that sort of thing. So they're very guarded about how they, you know, the education system here is racist. You know, the media's racist, the government's racist, and the judiciary's racist. It's like this is an institution of racism.
Racism will never disappear, but you can sure work on it. And I'm watching this generation coming do that. And again, it goes back to the very fact of being open to it and not categorizing people. If you're putting labels on people, because that's how I was treated growing up. I remember in the town of Smithers on our territory, going into a restaurant, and a sign on the door said, "No dogs or Indians allowed."
It's a societal issue, right? Like we can complain about legislated frameworks, but ultimately that power is being held within society. And whatever the people around us will accept as normal is what we will be facing as people. And I think one is connected strongly to the other. We talked about a next generation that's growing up into making better decisions and being more informed. And with that, I'm seeing far less racism in this younger generation. There's still lots of older people in places of making decision and places of power that are just simply not willing to give up that power. It's about creating spaces where that safe transfer of knowledge and safe transfer of power can occur. But wherever I look, and there's younger people now that have decision-making power, I'm seeing far less racism. I'm seeing values that mean something to us that are tangible. I see love. I see kinship and kindness. And those are like the little oases in this desert of really old, shitty history and racist policies and frameworks. So.
And like I said, racism will never disappear. It's how you actually are going to address it. The violence that we lived through and constantly being told that we were less than human, we had to change our mind too, because it was our parents and grandparents that said, you know what, I'll take my mother as an example. If one of my sisters, there are 14 of us, we have 6 girls, said, if my daughter raises and falls in love with a man and he is not Indigenous, that is still my son, and when they have babies, those are still my grandchildren.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You got a gig on tomorrow night at the Trades Hall over here. Is that right? And that's a public event, and
all right.
Both of you will be speaking.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's Thursday. That's tomorrow night, 6:15 at the Trades Hall Council. I come along, check that out. You want to give it a plug yourselves?
Well,
what do you expect to hear there?
Number one, I really like the accent of the Australian people. I'm learning how to swear from you.
And yeah, this is a convict penal colony when it began, you know.
And number two, the honor of getting to wear my regalia on your land.
Oh, mad.
To me is the first time in history. And I want to be able to address people. Because we're talking heart to heart. Again, as a high chief, it is such an honor to be here and then experience the relationships between people. And every culture that we've done, because we do a fair bit of traveling, it's how we get to spread the word.
Yeah.
Cultures are always the same. It comes from the land. We are the land and the land is us. But when you can get people together, like-minded and like-hearted, and be able to look out in a crowd and see that they're listening because they can relate to it, that is magic.
That is.
That's where progress, true progress, is made.
Absolutely.
And I look forward to tomorrow night.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, I'm going to play a song. You might recognize this fellow. His name's Talon. This is a song called Did You Notice?
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
Yeah, what a pleasure, and how surreal to listen to Talon. Thanks for playing that song. That was completely unexpected. Talon is being produced by Dakota Bear. Dakota is someone that works with us, has been a longtime supporter. He's a young indigenous entrepreneur, runs a company called Decolonial Records and Decolonial Clothing. He prints all of our swag, and has been producing Talon and many other young indigenous artists. And he's very inspiring. He lives a sober lifestyle and has a young family. And on many of the trips that Namax and I travel, we always bring youth along. And earlier this year, when we traveled to Japan and South Korea, Dakota came along with us. And that's exactly what I was talking about earlier, to create spaces where organically we can have the safe transfer of knowledge and safe transfer of power. And it was great to have Dakota along. So I hope he can hear this. And yeah, we really appreciate you, Dakota.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks so much. The Talon was here. I think it was even earlier this year. I'm losing my memory of it, but I think it was earlier this year that he was here, part of the festival, and well, it's a pleasure to meet him. And
far out.
Yeah, exactly what you say. He is. He's a beautiful fella. It's been a pleasure to have you on. My time runs out in about 5 minutes, and we're followed by a show called Yilliman. You might even want to have a yanti as well, so if you want to hang around a little bit longer. But also I just want to mention Len. Len, you want to say some words? Hi.
No.
Good morning.
It's fantastic. That was a very compelling hour of radio, and it's an honour to be sitting in the same studio. You know what you said earlier in the program about we have the same king, about Charles Windsor, Charles Philip Arthur George Windsor,
yeah,
who's the king of England, is also the king of Canada, the king of Australia, and the king of a few other countries. And you know that Robbie's trying to charge King Charles with genocide, and the Attorney General has to give his or her consent to such a prosecution. And clearly the reason for that is so that Aboriginal people, who are the only people who have experienced genocide in this country, cannot prosecute them. And from Robbie's point of view, the point in prosecuting is to stop and prevent the genocide. It's not really about the punishment, although there should be consequences, you know, and it's about time. But do you have the same stumbling block over there? Because it seems in most colonial countries, they put in this little clause that only the Attorney General, who's always white or non-Aboriginal.
Yep, absolutely. Namax had mentioned this earlier. The who used to be the Attorney General for so-called British Columbia is the person that signed the attack orders on the Wet'suwet'en when they were raided brutally and violently. He is now the premier of so-called British Columbia, so he was rewarded for those actions. And I couldn't give less of a shit about any of these people, really. It's assumed and presumed. I don't have a king. I don't really, like, I'm going to be really, really loud about this. We're matrilineal people, and I can think of a few queens within my own society. These are women that hold power. These are women that are being so kind, but they're also soft as a rock, as Namax always said. And that is the mindset that I think that we need. Someone that is willing to have all these tough conversations and to tell someone to fuck off where it's needed, but also really give you an ear and a shoulder and strong and solid advice. And I can tell you that the King of Canada or King of Australia or whatever is not on that list. That's for sure.
Yeah, we got him in our sights, so we'll take him out. Anyway, it's been a pleasure, Namox. And can you say your tribal name?
Yeah, so my name is Gwilachum Gabu, and my taxpayer name is Jesse Stopler.
Yeah, and you're going to be at the Trades Hall Council tomorrow.
Sure we are, yeah.
At 6:30. It's a free public event. It starts at 6:15, and so come along. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you.
I'm actually so looking forward to it. And, you know, as a hereditary chief, we often think about the words we say will be listened to. But I am a person who concentrates on the eye contact, body language. When I deal with politicians, I know their line. You know how I can tell? Their lips move.
Well, thanks, Chief Wallace. And we got Yilliman coming up. He might even want to have a yarn to you as well, and get to meet him as a mob, if you're up for it.
Sure, sure. Yeah, thank you so much. It's been our pleasure.
I'm going to go up with a song called Secret Wall by the Warumpi Band. Thanks, everyone. See you all next week. Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. To listen to a full audio of Bunjil's Fire radio show, a historically informed critical analysis of Aboriginal affairs and the ongoing political movement for land rights, treaty, sovereignty and the cessation of genocide, go to 3cr.org.au/Bunjil's Fire. If you want to support independent black media on 3CR, please go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.